exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed. This is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. I'm Jackie Grubb, and today's distinguished guest is a leader in the area of education and AI. With key roles and recognitions, including the Tech Champion Award, he is an influential force shaping the future of technology in education. Please join me in welcoming this remarkable individual, Mr. Dan Fitzpatrick. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
How are you?
I'm doing really well, actually. Yeah, I'm working down in the Surrey area of England at the moment. So I'm originally, as you can probably tell from my accent, originally from Newcastle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more sun down here, which I'm really appreciative of this week.
Brilliant. Well, Dan, I am so excited to have you on the podcast today, because obviously we're going to be talking about everything artificial intelligence. And a day does not go by when I'm either asked a question about it, or have we got a policy about it, or what is it? So I think the audience of this podcast are going to be very curious in what we've got to say. So my first question to you is, can you explain what artificial intelligence actually means?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? A lot of people are diving into artificial intelligence, playing around with these tools, especially an education point of view, trying to see if we can integrate it. But actually, not many people ask that question. It's really interesting. I think it's because it would be such a broad answer. But in a very, very simple way, artificial intelligence is essentially the act of humans training computer systems to try and think for themselves. Now, when we do that, the computer systems start to display some interesting capabilities. And we've noticed that over the last few years, haven't we, with some of the tools that have been released, that the thinking bit, the bit that where they can start to do that thinking on their own, it's starting to get really good. It's starting to be impressive. It's starting to scare some people. It's starting to excite a lot more people. And I think it brings with it so many questions for our society, because when you're getting computers to try and think for themselves, essentially, and again, in a very, very simple way, we're almost getting computers to try and mimic human beings. And once we start down that road, which we have, it brings up so many questions, not just for the computer systems themselves, but for us as humans as well.
So moving that forward, what is the significance of AI, particularly in education?
Education is all about human connection, isn't it? It's kind of the lifeblood of education. When it comes to education, you've got the actual content and skills that people learn. You have got the techniques, what we might call in the education trade, the pedagogy, like how that stuff is transmitted, for want of a better word, and how it's learned. But actually, more fundamental to all of that, we've got the actual human beings and the dynamic between the educator and the learner. And that kind of facilitates the learning. So if it's based on human connection and human thought processes, I guess, and now we have computers who are starting to infringe on that territory, well, actually, it starts to ask a lot of questions of education. And not just education, pretty much every sector and of society around the world, actually, when you delve into it. But back to education more specifically, we start to ask questions of, well, can these machines do a better job than a teacher? Do we have to learn certain things because these AIs know it now and can present it to us whenever we need it? I think the reason it's so important is because it hits at the fundamental core of what it means to learn, what it means to teach, and I guess then what education means. At the minute, it's not that scary because the capability isn't replicating an actual human being. It's not replicating an actual good teacher. It's just able to create things for us at the moment. So the collaboration between educators and AI is reaching a really exciting place, I think, in terms of not that it's going to take over the educator, but actually it's going to augment and enhance the education process. Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, and that's beautifully put. Coming from the wise guru of AI and all things AI, that's easy for you to say. And that is the objective of this podcast, to dispel myths and to be curious about what AI is today and maybe what AI is tomorrow. And you've been in leadership roles for a very, very long time now, haven't you? So can you explain to us how those leadership roles and your directorship in digital strategy has actually influenced your strategic planning with AI?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm writing a book about this at the moment, so it's on my mind a lot. Yeah, I really appreciate the term guru, or some people call me an expert. I really don't think I am. I think when it comes to this technology, all anybody is probably just a few months ahead of somebody else. That's all. And I think even the people who create this technology, until they've trained it and until they start interacting with it, they don't know what it's going to be capable of. A great example of that is, I think it was when they trained ChatGPT version 2. They had no idea that it would be able to translate. They discovered that after they trained it, because it had learned that for itself. So yeah, it's interesting. And one of the things I always talk about with school and college and university leaders is, how do we strategically prepare for something that we don't have any idea of what the future is going to be, what it actually is? It's tough enough to try and strategically move an organization, especially an educational organization, when you've got a good idea of what the next few years are going to be like.
Absolutely.
Trying to do it when you don't know what it's going to be like is really difficult and requires a certain kind of leap of faith from a leader or a leadership team. So I guess what I do is, I'm really lucky, I get to work with school districts around the United States, universities around America and Europe and the Middle East, is we kind of look at two different types of innovation. We kind of look at, well, there's the type of innovation that can make us do what we already do better. It tends to be referred to as linear innovation. So what are our current goals? What are we trying to do? And how do we build maybe some efficiency into that, maybe some more creativity? And I think the education system's done a really good job of that, actually. Now, that's not always a positive thing. I worked in high school education for a while before I moved into further education. And it might involve like cutting down lunchtime so that students are spending more time in front of teachers. It might involve, we had a phrase, every second counts, because somebody had done a study that said that the amount of minutes that a student was in front of a teacher equated to the grade they would get. So you can see it's almost like conveyor belt style innovation, really, of how do we cut that process down. Now, that can be good in some respect. It can also be detrimental. I mean, look at mental health among high school students and so on. So I'm not going to assign a judgment on whether that's always good or not, because I don't believe it is. But I think it's really interesting, because I looked this up, and if you're ever looking for a change of career, you can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars just by being a person, a consultant who goes into like a factory and helps them to like shave a minute off of their production line. Because you can imagine like 1 minute could save them millions and millions of dollars or pounds. So it's big money to be able to do that. So linear innovation, although important, you're still getting to the same goals. You're still reaching the same goals. There's a different type of innovation, though, and it's non-linear innovation. And it's what's needed when that kind of, what we're already doing, those existing goals start to be disrupted and possibly start to become irrelevant. So just doing the same thing, but faster and more efficiently, obviously isn't going to cut it. Mm-hmm. So we need to build something new. We need to create the future, essentially. One of the things I do is, when looking at trying to create strategy for the future of education, is going, right, well, yes, we've got linear innovation. We know AI can help there, and we know AI can really help. However, what do we do when AI starts to disrupt what we're doing and actually maybe make parts of the education system irrelevant?
Yeah.
We have to start to create something new. So yeah, and that comes from like from the leadership roles I've had, looking at that type of innovation. Also, I'm very passionate for communication strategies. I think every single person, it doesn't matter what level you are in an organization, should be taught how to create a communication strategy for themselves, because it's really difficult working in a big organization and trying to either just get your voice heard or implement change. So one of the things I find when I go into a school, college, university is an AI strategy is going to be futile if the communication strategy isn't effective. So we look at the communication strategy. And again, I picked that up from being in leadership and further education of how to do that. So yeah, so I guess my experiences in leadership have really helped me to help other organizations try and see how this technology can help them. But also, I think it would be remiss of me not to mention how we might have to recreate parts of what we've traditionally called education in this new world.
That's really, really good to hear. And when I'm thinking about my job role, and that's a lot to do with strategy, strategic intent, absolutely agree with you with the communication strategy side of things. How hard we try in terms of communication in every walk of life, we can always improve on it, can't we? So actually, it's always got to be top of the agenda. So just to unpick that a little bit more, the AI Classroom book has been out for over a year.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that book, actually, because we managed to really pull it together fast and became a bestseller as well, which was amazing to see. I suppose the thing with the book is, although I travel around a lot and work with schools and educators, the book can travel much further than me, reaches parts of the world and people that I can't reach. So it's amazing to be able to help people start to embrace this technology, because that first book, The AI Classroom, is mainly about what can we practically do as educators to start utilizing some of this technology. It does get into some of the kind of, well, what does this mean for the skills of a teacher, the skills of a student? But it's mainly kind of that practical side. And I go to a lot of AI conferences and there's a lot of dreaming going on. There's a lot of daydreaming of, well, what might this technology be like in a few years' time? What might we have? To be honest, I love indulging in that type of thought. When I was in high school, I used to be a philosophy teacher. That's my bag. I love looking at all of that. But I think what people really need at the moment is that practical guidance of, it's that thing, isn't it, when you're trying to upskill teachers especially, actually, we just need to give them it in very, very basic steps, because teachers have got big workloads. They don't have time. I suppose the privilege that I have to be able to think about this a lot when there's so many other things going on and they're on the ground helping students. So just small steps of how to start gaining benefits from this technology, I think, is so essential. And hopefully that's what the book does.
Great. We're talking about the benefits and the challenges. We're talking about communication, which is vitally important. So going back to my own reflections of where everybody is in terms of their curiosity around AI and their understanding of AI, can you unpick the benefits and challenges a little bit more to different audience?
Yeah, in quite a basic way, whatever you normally do in terms of, let's say, writing or let's say admin style tasks, AI will probably be able to do a good job in it. So a tool like ChatGPT or Google Gemini, you ask it to do something, it's fundamentally a text-to-text AI tool. And what that means is you put text in, so you write what's normally known as a prompt or a question or a request, and then it brings text back to you and it talks back to you, simulating human conversation at a very, very high accuracy rate. And because it's trained on so much information, like the free version of ChatGPT is trained on approximately 300 billion words worth of information. And I worked this out because I'm a bit of a geek. I worked out that if you were to try and read that amount of information, on average, we read 100 words every 30 seconds. If we were to read at that rate nonstop, it would take about 2,800 years to read that amount of information. So it's got a big knowledge base, and also a lot of them can search the internet now. So a good place to start is getting it to do those boring admin tasks. When I'm talking to teachers, one of the first examples I show them is kind of like a base level, get it to do something, is a risk assessment. So I say, right, who got into education to write a risk assessment? Nobody got into education to do a risk assessment. So use AI to help you. Now, I think that's a great example because it's a legal document as well. So you're going to need to check over it. You can't just give this thing to AI and go, right, create it for me and then not check it. You have to check it. You have to make sure that it's good, because sometimes there are those inaccuracies. Sometimes there are what we might call bias from these systems. Mm. So we need to double check it. We need to collaborate with it. I think that's always key. No matter what we do with AI, we always have to evaluate it ourselves and collaborate with it. I think that's a good place to start. And I'm starting to see, as more and more tools are created for education. We're starting to see specific customizable AIs for students that are trained on specific curriculum or units of work or skills that students can interact with and learn from, and it can assess what they know and so on. That we're starting to see quite a few of them come onto the market. And yeah, I guess there's so much going on with this field. I could go in any direction here.
And I'm going to bring you into another direction. I'm thinking of an education and skills organisation. So whether that's a school, whether it's a college, whether it's a university, then you have your teaching staff, don't you? And you've already touched on how AI can support teaching staff. And beautifully, you've talked about administration and how we can look at AI and reducing workload for administration. And then we have our students, and then just listening to you, we get asked questions from employers on how are we using AI and how can we support them in using AI. And we have some major large employers, but equally important, we have SMEs as well, which there will be a different take on whichever landscape that you're in. So do you have a view on that?
Probably about 80% of my work is with education, and I do probably about 20% is with businesses. A great way for businesses to get into this is marketing, is the marketing side of it. It's probably one of the first use cases for this technology because it can be quite good at writing. So any copy that companies need in terms of emails, newsletters, website writing, social media writing, whatever it is, using these tools can help give some great ideas. In fact, I know of a few very small businesses with just a few employees who would seriously thinking about hiring a marketing person.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think this fully replaces somebody who's good at marketing. However, just with a bit of knowledge on how to use some of these tools, they're able to create, in just a few minutes really, a week's worth of content that they may send out to customers or prospective customers. So I think that's a nice place to start. Well, what we're starting to see as well is from other businesses around the world is them starting to use AI to interact with customers directly. So the best example at the minute is the finance company Klarna. And what they did was they designed an AI that would speak to their customers. And they've had massive, massive impact. There was a newspaper report out at the end of February that said that their AI was doing the work of about 700 agents. It was getting 25% less repeat inquiries because the AI was very accurate with the information it was given to customers. So there are lots of different avenues businesses can start to look at with this technology in terms of customer relations, marketing. Also, though, and one that doesn't get mentioned all that often is some of these tools are really good at taking a lot of information and holding that information and analysing it really well.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see, although they might not admit it very readily, but leaders of companies starting to use it to assist decision making. And because as a human, we can only hold so much information in our heads when we make those decisions. But if you train an AI on the data you needed to know to make a decision and then ask it for its insights, you can use that. Again, that's not going to replace a good CEO or a good leader, because as you will know, as one of these good leaders, is that a lot of it is experience and intuition as well. So it's not going to fully replace that. But as an extra source of evidence to help make decisions, I think some of these AIs are really coming into their own. We're scratching the surface here with the capabilities and some of the capability that's being worked on at the moment behind the scenes by the AI companies. So we're going to see more and more use cases. About a year ago, I noticed there was a website out there where you could, instead of getting a new employee, you could subscribe to an employee. So if you wanted someone to do your finance, you could subscribe and you would have an AI finance person doing that for you. Now, that opens up a whole lot of other questions about placement versus augmentation.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the evidence is suggesting that it's the collaboration between humans and AI that is getting the better results, not just the AI on its own.
Yeah, and that's why I asked the question, and that's why I started off the podcast today with the question, because it is so broad, isn't it? And then people's perception and people's views can be just from one extreme to another. But my reflection is that this is about opportunities and possibilities, and actually today making people's lives better. But it is limitless of what can happen in the future. And it's really important, isn't it, that people like you spread the communication and the message usage of facts and what is out there and what can be done to make lives better.
Yeah, we're in that strange place. Even though I was only about 11 years old, it reminds me a bit of the late 90s in terms of the internet and what we had with the capability of the internet.
Yeah.
What companies thought were possible and then what they went on to do. That boom in the 2000s. Just to give you another solid example on especially the change in people's lives bits, I was at this conference in Cornwall and one of the speakers heads up a small company where they train people who are homeless to use AI tools. And it was so powerful because what they do essentially is they've discovered that one of the biggest barriers to homeless people getting the housing that they need, the benefits that they need, is them not being able to understand all of the government documents that they need to read and fill out. It's a huge barrier. What they did was they showed them how to put it into a tool like ChatGPT and get ChatGPT to summarize it, to write it in a more simple way for them, to analyze the documents. And what they're finding is that these people, when they then go to meet with housing agencies and other places to get benefits and so on, that the homeless people know more about their rights than the people who are actually interviewing them. So it's massively increased their ability to get what they need to get in order to help them. I love musing on what the future of the world's going to be like in the next few years with this technology, but actually there are real solid cases of where it's changing people's lives in just quite simple ways with the ability that we have now.
That is really incredible. So your thoughts are that there is an impact on equity, equality, and inclusion there.
Absolutely. If used in the right way,
yes.
I do think the opposite is also possible.
Yeah.
In terms of, and you'll know this better than anyone, what we saw during COVID with the gap in digital skills.
Digital poverty.
I think that AI could actually turn that into a gulf. Because let's say if we're talking about students, our students who have access to good technology, access to the ability and the skills to use AI well, they can now do so much more than those who can't.
Yeah.
So those who don't have access, don't have the skills, stay where they are. Those who do have access and do have the skills get better and better and better. And actually, by default, as the AI gets better, they get better as well because of what they're going to be able to do. When I work with schools, universities, colleges, one of the first things that I say to them is, what do we do in the face of big tech giving us all this new technology? It happened during social media as well, and we just took the good with the really ugly with social media.
Yeah.
What can we do with AI? And I think one of the first things we can do is to address any gaps we have in access to technology and skills to be able to use it well. It's not only the thing that we can do now, it's the thing that we should do now.
Exactly.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speak on X, Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram, and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
I'm so passionate about social mobility and inclusion. And yeah, you're absolutely right. The challenges and obstacles through COVID and beyond still happening now in terms of digital poverty, deprivation, access to all sorts of things is really important. And it'd be really good to see if there is ever any research of the impact on social mobility going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It does level that playing ground. Because it doesn't matter what your education to a certain extent, if you can use these tools, you can have it speak to you where you're at and take information and be presented to you where you're at to help you be more socially mobile, I guess. And I think in a way as well, that's what's happened to me over the last couple of years as well. I mean, working with this technology has helped me to start my own business. It's helped me to utilize existing skills in a more powerful way.
Yeah.
So I know it's possible.
Lifelong learning, widening participation is really, really important. And if it can aid that, then that's even better, isn't it? But sort of changing the conversation a little bit, gosh, I've got here that you've trained over 55,000 educators globally. Congratulations. That is really impressive. And how did you customize programs to be able to achieve that?
Yeah, it was a long year, but it's carried on this year as well. A lot of people want to know about AI at the moment. So there's a lot of demand out there for it. And I promise my family I will be home soon. But I guess it's been invited to go and speak at events and do workshops with teachers.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I've worked in education technology for a long time now, and I've never demonstrated or showed teachers how to use a certain technology tool and had the reactions that you see with this.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I know that this is going to change what they're doing, because teachers are really good at being able to filter out through rubbish advice and through rubbish tools. Teachers have got such a big workload that actually anything that raises an alarm bell in terms of taking up time without delivering impact just gets put to the back of their minds, and rightfully so. It's amazing to be able to show them how to do something and to use a certain set of tools or to develop a certain set of skills that's really going to save them time. And we're talking hours per week as well, which is crazy, but it's possible, and many educators are now doing that around the world.
Yeah. What's your approach to different diverse backgrounds or cultures?
Giving talks and workshops around the world.
Yeah, because people learn in different ways, don't they?
You've just worried me now. I was wondering why those people in Dubai were looking really confused when I was talking. The content of what I deliver tends to stay the same. I'm very reactive to what's going on in the moment, I think. I suppose it changes from audience to audience, even within England, just based on who's in front of us. And I think it's one of the things you learn when you become a teacher, isn't it? That you can know your content, you can know how to teach, but actually it can all go out of the window depending on who are the actual learners in front of you. As a teacher, you just kind of learn to adapt to that in the moment a lot of the time.
Do you adapt the way that you present or deliver or integrate into your programs that you're delivering? So, you know, whether it's a student, whether it's an employer, or whether it's a teacher. But am I coming to the conclusion now that actually the philosophy is the same?
Yeah, I suppose the examples change. If I'm talking to someone in business, the examples and the wording I use is very different to educators. In fact, I did a session recently with some high schoolers in Northern California, really traditional, like American high schoolers. And I probably switched back into kind of like teacher mode and was a bit more interactive with them, a bit more active, more in a facilitator role. But again, that happens in the moment, really, depending on who's in front of you. So
yeah,
I do like speaking to audiences who don't have English as a first language, simply because there's some really cool AI tools out there that does translation and does voice dubbing. So I get to kind of demonstrate some of those tools. And there's a great tool where you can record a video of yourself and then select which language you want it to be in, and it will change the whole video to you speaking that language.
Yeah.
And the voice, the lip movement and everything matches what you're saying. It's amazing. So yeah, you get to demonstrate some of the AI tools that are bridging the gap between languages in those circumstances, which is really cool.
Yeah. In terms of AI then, it's inclusive for everybody. So whether we're a visual learner, whether English isn't our first language, or if we have a disability, AI is fit for purpose for all?
Yes, I think so. Anybody can use this. And I think it does come back down probably to that translation element of it, that it does understand other languages, can translate really easily, and therefore makes it really accessible across different cultures. I don't want to be showing off like all these different places. I was in Mexico a couple of weeks ago and got it to do something. I think I might have been write a poem about the university I was at, and then got it to rewrite it in Spanish, but with Mexican slang. I mean, I didn't have a clue what it was saying, but the audience were laughing and said that it did that really well. So I think you're right there. A testament to the technology is the accessibility of the technology means that it does inspire and allow people all over the world, no matter what their cultural background or language, to use it.
And can it bring our world together then? So wherever we are in the world, AI can bring people together, whether it's teaching and learning, whether it's in a community landscape. That's what I'm just thinking through here now.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's probably two elements to this based on something I was just reading the other day. I think it can. I think we'll start to see our technology the way you can have a real live conversation with somebody and it will be translated in real time but without a delay. In fact, some of the new announcements from OpenAI, the company who created ChatGPT, showed just that ability. And I think, what was it, the Google Pixel Buds from about 5 years ago kind of tried to do this, where it was an in-ear piece that would then listen and translate in real time. But because it didn't have this new AI technology, it just didn't live up to expectations. I think in the next year or so, we'll probably see hardware, wearable technology that will be able to do that quite easily. I think another element of that is actually bringing people together to have kind of world-class learning experiences. Yeah. It's something I don't always agree with Elon Musk, but in an interview he was doing a couple of weeks ago, he talked about how education is almost like the equivalent of old school vaudeville. And what he meant by that was back before television, back before radio, before the internet, the kind of height of entertainment were these shows that happened in each town around America. So you wanted to go see some entertainment and some variety, you would go to a vaudeville show, your local vaudeville show. And he talked about, well, actually, that doesn't necessarily always happen now, because television brings the best to everybody. Radio brought the best to everybody. His whole point was that, well, at the moment, the way we do education is very much like a vaudeville show. So it's almost like localized education. And he talks about how maybe the capability of AI will be able to allow students, no matter where they are in the world, to be able to learn from the best.
I'm listening to that intently, and for a few reasons, really. One, because of my passion for equity and inclusion. So in my mind, I was just thinking that anybody in the world, if they find themselves in a classroom that they don't understand the language that the teacher is presenting, then there is something around this that would be inclusive. And then I was thinking that I was in a recent situation in a yoga class, and there was a Spanish person in the class that couldn't speak English. So actually, AI can aid opening up the community so it's fit for all to understand from an education point of view and a learning point of view anywhere, which is really exciting, isn't it?
100%, yeah. And even down to people who rely on sign language as well. There's tools being made that will translate that and speak to them. I think it's one of the really cool things that's happening in AI at the moment, although it still needs a lot of development, is AI wearable technology. So when I give a talk, I wear a pair of sunglasses, which were made by Meta, the company behind Facebook, and Ray-Ban. It's got AI integrated into them. It's got a camera on it. You can say to it, look at this. What am I looking at? Explain it to me. You can ask it questions and have a conversation with it. And there are other technologies being created at the minute that will also put text on the lens of the glasses, so you're not necessarily having to have a conversation with it. And I think that is going to be incredible for accessibility for people with disabilities. One of my sisters, she had an illness recently, now she's mainly blind, and I keep talking to her about this technology because I think it's going to really transform the world, really, when you're not having to have a person continually with you explaining everything to you, but actually the technology can step in and do that.
Yeah.
And I think there's something around dignity there as well, of giving people their dignity back.
Yeah. As an educationist, that's what I was thinking through also. And in terms of supporting neurodiversity, I mean, there's a myriad of things that can aid, support and develop, isn't there?
100%. And there's some crazy technology happening at the moment. So I try to not do the crystal ball thing with AI, but there are some technologies actually being worked on at the moment that I think are going to absolutely revolutionize what we do. So one of them is what's referred to as brain technology. In fact, last year, Osaka University in Japan, what they did was they wanted to train an AI model on images. And what would normally happen there is you'd find lots and lots of images, you'd upload them to the AI, and you would label the images so that the AI could learn what was in the images. Except what they did was they didn't show the images to the AI. What they did was they give them to 4 human participants, and they had to just look at them. And while they were looking at them, they did MRI scans of their brains. And it was the MRI scan images that they gave to the AI. Now, after a while, the AI started to get really good at being able to guess the type of image that the person was looking at.
Wow.
Then what they did was, a bit like a magician, they said, right, to the participants, put all the images down, close your eyes, and think of an image in your head, any image you want. And they did that. Did an MRI scan, they give it to the AI, and they asked the AI to recreate the images. and they're about 80% accurate. This is a year ago. Berkeley University in America did something recently where they measured the brain activity of somebody listening to a Pink Floyd song, give it to the AI, and the AI recreated the audio of the song. So there's some big implications with technology. There's a university in Abu Dhabi at the minute making the world's first thought-to-text tool. So you think it, and it'll write it down for you. And then if you kind of pair that with what Elon Musk is doing at Neuralink, which is installing small computer devices into people's brains, the technology that we already have starts to get really crazy. And in fact, they've just trialed a Neuralink using this technology with somebody who's paralyzed. So they installed it. What it does is it allows them to move the cursor, use the keyboard on a computer, control the computer just with their thoughts. So this guy can do so much now just with his thoughts. And if you go to YouTube and you search Neuralink first patient, you'll find videos of him explaining how he just literally thinks about moving the cursor on the screen and it moves. The whole brain side of this technology that we already have, this is not going, let's imagine what if this technology could do this or that. This is what we already have, is going to change things. Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI, the people who created ChatGPT, he thinks that within about 2 years now, because of this technology, we'll probably get prototypes of the first bits of technology that will allow humans to communicate with each other just through thought.
Gosh.
And that pretty much exists. It just needs development.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that is not AI integrating with our biology, but it's AI getting its own body. And the advancement with robotics at the moment, robots that essentially have the mind of a tool like ChatGPT, so you can have an intellectual conversation with it and it can do things for you. There's a few companies doing this. One of them is Tesla, the Tesla Optimus Generation 2. If you go have a look at that on YouTube, it's just phenomenal. And they're going to be putting them to work in their factories very soon. And their aim is that within 3 years, anybody will be to buy one of these for about the price of a family-sized car. Literally within the next, let's say 5 years, people are going to have robots in their house, cleaning their houses, making their dinner, doing the dishes. Not only that, but you'll be able to have a conversation with it over dinner. And this is stuff that we've got already. The consumer side of that is really cool, and I love thinking about what we're going to have. But the ability to help people who have got certain needs with this technology is just going to be phenomenal.
Wow.
How people are going to be able to communicate, people who could never communicate beforehand, or who've lost ability to communicate, or have special educational needs that means they can't express themselves in certain ways. People who are housebound, who, if you look at the creaking healthcare system in the UK, we could have robotic technology that could help people. I'm with you. I think the equity side of this and the helping people who really need that help, I think this is really exciting, as well as the consumer side of it. That's why I'm a big advocate for it.
Yeah.
I think there are negatives to this technology and things that we do need to safeguard, and just like with any technology, but I think the benefits are going to be amazing for our world and for individual people in that world.
Well, we need to continue having ambassadors like you that are directing this in the right way to, as I said, making lives better and changing people's lives and being used in the right way. That's just going to be to the advantage of the country and the planet, really. Going back to the learning side of things, with your wisdom and everything that we've been talking about, what would your advice be to our teachers in terms of that teacher-student relationship and bringing AI to the forefront and making sure that we're giving the awareness that we need right now to get us prepared for all those wonderful things that you've said for tomorrow?
Probably the first thing we need to do, and it's the thing I see a lot, is that students are still seeing this as like a cheating machine. And they're really hung up about it as well. For a lot of parents and students I speak to, I think we need to broaden our horizons and make it okay to use AI. Now, obviously, we don't want AI just to be doing everybody's work for them, because learning still needs to happen. However, we need to show that these tools can augment our work and help us go beyond we've ever done before. Because let's be honest, employers are going to expect it. We're already starting to see job descriptions where included in it is skills to use ChatGPT. A bit like when about 15, 20 years ago, when it just became the standard to have the Microsoft Office bit of the job spec.
Only 15, 20 years ago.
It's probably a lot less than that, to be honest. But we're going to start seeing that with these tools. And I think the important thing is that this is not a technical skill. So logging into a website and using this tool is probably the only technical bit that you need to do, log into a website. And hopefully 99% of people can do that. This is a communication skill. It's a collaboration skill. It's a project management skill. I think for a lot of us, especially who are teachers, we might already be teaching a lot of these skills already, but it's how do we now direct these towards using AI as well? I get a lot of, especially primary school level teachers saying, well, what can we do? Because, well, a lot of these tools are age restricted. And I say, I think the best thing you can do is just make literacy better than it's ever been, because the ability to be highly literate is what is going to allow you to get the most out of these tools, because you need to get what's in your head into this tool in order to collaborate with it well. So how you express yourself, how you articulate yourself is going to be so important. There's a lot of projections saying that whereas in recent years there's been a huge swing to the more technical math science skills, that we could see a swing back to the more humanities language based skills for this reason, because the actual AI will be able to do the technical stuff better than us. It's how we communicate with it that's going to determine how good that is, I guess. So yeah, skills that we've tended to put on the periphery as the soft skills, as we've traditionally called them, I think are going to have to come back into play in a big way. I honestly think this, although it might be a bit of a pipe dream, our places of education need to really become places of motivation.
And empowerment.
And it's nothing new. I suppose we've had YouTube, we've had Google for a long time, but our students are going to be carrying technology around with them, wearing technology that will give them access to any information, any training on how to do certain skills that they need in a way that they will understand and will help them learn, because the AI will know them intimately. So educational places just giving more information alongside that. I think what we probably need to do instead is be places where we motivate students to take agency in discovering the skills and information they need. And I suppose that is lifelong learning, really. I suppose that is how we instill that ability to go and ask the right questions as well in it. We think asking the right questions in the right way is the bread and butter of a good teacher. And we build whole pedagogical models around it of how to get good answers out of students. We need to teach those skills to the students now as well, on how to ask good questions, not how to answer questions, but how to ask questions. And they're going to be 10 times more valuable than just how to ask questions. So yeah, I think we've got a lot of reflection to do.
We have,
on this, now that we are coexisting in this world with artificial intelligence.
And that really motivates me as a privileged leader of a large organisation of the future of our teachers and how learning can be supported to bring it even more into the 21st century. We just need enough people like you to be leading from the forefront of making that change in the right way. Dan, I know that you're an ed futurist. What other developments do you foresee that are on the horizon?
A lot of the barriers to AI really progressing are the things like the energy to be able to run them and the computer capacity to be able to run them. There's some big developments happening. Anyone who follows quantum computing will know that there have been some huge developments and will continue to be some huge developments in that area, which it's going to make the computers we have now look like stone tools from archaeological sites. The power of quantum computing, that with some of the kind of fusion technology advancements that are happening at the moment as well. I think having quantum computing, fusion and AI together, we could potentially see a lot of development. And there's a lot of people think we're kind of on a traditional J curve here when it comes to AI development. And we're still on the flat part of the J curve, and that development will compound over the coming years. Well, there's a lot more development to happen, I think. How do you prepare for something where you don't really know what's going to happen and what the impact's going to be?
Yeah.
For me, I think it comes down to culture, and it comes down to having the capacity within an organization to experiment, fail, and try again. And obviously that needs the right culture to be able to do that. But I think it's going to be so essential. The education system for the last few decades has kind of been immune to a lot of the advances that have happened out in the world. Who still goes to Blockbusters on a Friday night? It just doesn't happen because it doesn't exist anymore. And those guys were offered the chance to buy Netflix in the early 2000s, but they just couldn't get past the linear innovation side of things to see that there needed to be some non-linear innovation as well. And I really kind of fear for educational institutions, actually, that if we don't spend some time looking at the non-linear innovation, the creating the future side of things, there's going to be a lot of disruption coming, a lot of competition coming as well by technology and companies creating educational solutions.
Dan, I think this is the first of many podcasts, and with the changes in the landscape and the changes that are needed in the educational system, I'm really excited to be able to talk to you in the future and actually progress on what we've spoken about today. And I was excited about today and knew how important it was for the planet, but especially for the education system. So I thank you for your wisdom, and I'm motivated, and I know this podcast will inspire many. So thank you for talking to me today. Until we meet again.
Thanks for having me, Jackie.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.